Okay, well, thank you, and welcome to the Roseanne Memorial. My name is John. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, guys. Let's start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. I'm not going to share very much tonight. For those who weren't at the birthday party, I did a pretty long, not a long thing, but a share about my experiences with Roseanne. It is in the 12th stepper of this month, March 2014, and you can either get a copy of it here, or there are some extra copies of the talk, and in hard copy. Or, like I said, you can get it on the LA Intergroup website on the March 2014 12 stepper. Before we start for open sharing, I have two things I want to talk about. First, it's a little pet peeve of mine. It's not a pet peeve, but it's something I would love to see happen more in Southern California. I travel to a lot of events, OA events, around the country and in Canada. And one of the things I love is in most of the places I visit, they close with "I put my hand in yours," which I think is a wonderful, wonderful piece of writing that Roseanne herself wrote. And in Southern California, it just isn't said that much, And meanwhile, I've been at a lot of meetings where there's long discussions on which prayers are appropriate and which prayers aren't appropriate. And to me, what prayer could be more appropriate than one written by a member of Overeaters Anonymous and, in fact, the founder? Think about that, about your meetings. I would love to hear it said more. And we will at the end of this event. We've had a lot of people help today, and there's Carla from the Special Events Chair for the LA Intergroup. The LA Intergroup Board has been totally enthusiastic in helping with this, both with work and financially. John helped put a lot of our coffee together today, and Robin, and a lot of other people. So let's give them a hand for coming out and doing all this. That's some of the fun stuff going on. The other thing I want to mention is, there's one story I forgot last couple of years when I was with Roseanne. Roseanne spent the last couple of years in a rehab center, and it was a pretty nice rehab center, and for the most part she liked it. The one thing she didn't like is the food. And I'll tell you, in the home of Haute Cuisine, some of the best restaurants in the world, Roseanne's favorite restaurant was Junior's, which, for people who are listening to this podcast, Junior's is an old-style Jewish deli in on Westwood Avenue in West L.A., and it's now called Lenny's, but it was Junior's. And whenever I would come over, most of the time I'd say, do you want me to bring something from Junior's? And I remember one day I called and said, hey, can I come over? And she says, yeah, you're going to stop at Junior's? And I said, yeah, but I'm coming too. And she goes, oh, okay, that'd be good too. And to somebody who doesn't know us, that would sound like uncaring. But we both shared a laugh, and because we both shared the disease, and we both understood that comment exactly. So it's a lot of fun. So rather than me spend a lot of time talking, we're going to start out with our first speaker for this afternoon, David H. David?
Hi, I'm David, compulsive reader, and I've been thinking a lot over this week what I was going to say. I would say if this wasn't LA, I'd say I sort of have a unique perspective on Roseanne, because I've known her most of my life, and to me she was just a regular member, and I think there's a lot of people who probably feel that way in this room, but I've been fortunate in a way to travel all over the world and go to meetings and events, and I've given service. And when you say you're from L.A., Roseanne was a celebrity, and you knew Roseanne, and what is she like, and what's her recovery like, and people would have her on a pedestal. And so it's very unique, I think, what most of us had in L.A., and so I'll tell you just a little bit about what I remember of Roseanne and the part she played in my life. My mother started OA started coming to OA in 1973. I was 12 years old at the time. We lived on the other side of National. She lived south of National, and we lived north of National, just a few blocks apart. And my mother took me to a few meetings then, and I can't remember if I met Roseanne then, or later my mom started taking me to a teen meeting in 1976. I was 15 years old. But Roseanne was my mother's friend. She was the person we ran into at Hughes Market. She, in 1977, when I started getting more active in OA and we started a second team meeting, my mother suggested that I start coming with her on a Monday night. There was a big meeting. Bill B. had this big meeting. And so that was the first or second maybe regular OA meeting other than the team meeting that I was going to. And we just carpooled with my mom's friend Roseanne and a few other people. And she's always been that to me, just my mom's friend, then later became my friend. And somebody felt like almost like an aunt is how I always felt toward Roseanne. And it was just somebody I had a lot of respect for and admiration, because she had such a clear vision about compulsive overeating and that this was a disease. And really, up to that point, for myself and I think the world, it was just we don't have enough willpower, or if we had the right diet. And she really understood the part about that we have an addiction, and it's not the specific food, but it's about food that we're addicted to. And she really got it. And anyway, she just was just a real person. And that was so important for me. I remember, going to meetings at Palms Park and later Serenity Sunday, wherever. She would just pop in like a regular person. And I think she really appreciated the people who just treated her like a regular person. Because I would later see her at conventions and conferences, and people would get polarized with different things or treat her different. And I really think she wanted to just be a member. She needed this program just like anybody else. And she couldn't do that a lot of places. But here she could. And in 1989, I got appointed to the Board of Trustees for OA. And all of a sudden, I got to work with Roseanne on more of a business level. And I don't remember if it was a year or two later, she was starting to talk to OA, and the World Service wanted her to write a book about the history. And it was very contentious, let's just put it that way. And so I don't know if it was her decision or the board's or how it came up, but they wanted somebody to negotiate who was a friend of hers. And I got appointed. And I got to work with her on a business level, also with Marv, her husband. And go to their house, and she had such a sense of history. It wasn't just, she really wanted OA, the archives. She wanted to make sure that they were set down, and she wanted people to know the history of OA. That was before the book Beyond Our Wildest Dreams. But it was so important. Whenever she would speak on the history, and it was so important that people had appreciation of what it was. And so we went through it, and it was just a really fantastic experience to get to do and help fulfill her dream and the OA's dream to have a book about the history. And this was her thing. When she goes, she wanted to make sure that her legacy and the things she stood for and the history of OA mainly, that it was there. And it was a fantastic experience. And to see, to help her through that process. And later, my wife, who's a member of this program, became her book sponsor. And she would read chapters to my wife, and they had their thing, and that was separate. But it was really nice. And the thing that I was thinking about this week, and something that a lesson Roseanne taught me is, she really founded this program and drove it for all those years and did a lot of service. And she had some some poor experiences later on when people couldn't accept that she was a real person and had her ups and downs, and some bad experiences with service and with OA as a whole, and also some wonderful times. And thank God when I was involved in service, people really, for the most part, really respected her, and it was beyond those times. But there was some really rough times and some bitterness that she had and that she had to work through. But what I really admire is that this was her baby. OA was her baby, and she really saw it through. But she was like a parent when the child has to grow up, and she still stayed involved. She used her, when she'd go places, the respect she got, the sort of bully pulpit of being the founder, she would use when she felt things were important. But she also could step back and let the Board of Trustees, let OA grow and take over. And that's a really good lesson, because there's rotation of service and you have to trust. And she really taught me a lot of lessons with how she operated and so much respect. Also, one thing that always comes to me, I remember being in the car with her, and my mother was talking to her and saying, oh, I'm not losing weight fast enough. And my mother was using OA like a diet. And Roseanne was talking to her and said, you know what? OA is not about losing weight quickly, and it's not about, it's about a one day at a time for the rest of your life. And if you're on the right path, that's all that matters. And so much, and she wasn't talking to me, and that was like, we're talking 30-something years ago, that still comes back to me. It's one day at a time, it's forever. It's not a race. I don't need to graduate. All I have to do is make a little progress. That's all I need to do. And those were the kind of wisdom that Roseanne has kept with me. So I'm really grateful that I knew Roseanne and got to be a part of her life and all the love that I always felt from her. So I thank John for asking me to share.
You're going to MC one of these things. You write some notes for what you're going to say up front and then what you're going to say after the speakers. And I started by reading the stuff I was going to talk about after the speakers. And now I'm not going to bother too much. I was going to do a whole bunch of things about the history of OA. But every time I would ask Roseanne something about the history of OA, she would say, it's in the book. And so, folks, you really want to know, it's in the book. They're over there. I can just say, you know, from what something David said, and I'm going to shut up after this, Roseanne must have gone to 40 conferences. I went to 2, and I was done. God bless her being able to do that. And right now, we're going to bring up Roy Royale.
Well, I'm a compulsive overeater and a miracle in mental health. My name is Roy. You guys laugh. They always laugh. Page 133. Anyway, I wanted to read you a couple things. This is from page 14 of the big book about Bill W. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. This is Bill W. with 3 days at a detox. And he's had a spiritual awakening. He's already thinking of helping others. And let me read you something from Roseanne's book here, Beyond Our Wildest Dream. This is on page 5. And she talks about being inspired by an early GA member, Jim W., who was also an AA member. My dormant drive as a world saver was about to be awakened. And listen to this. Now she's talking with Jim W., a GA member and an early friend of our program. Roseanne asks, are you talking about starting a local group or a few groups in the city? She hasn't even founded the program. Oh no, I shook my head vehemently. I know that someday my organization will be as big as AA or bigger, and it will be all around the world. Someone else might have laughed at my grandiose visions, but not Jim. You can do it, he urged me. I did it, and GA is really growing. I'll help you. And the reason I read that is because, you know, I've often thought about Bill W. He was such a grandiose guy. He talked about being... his heroes were captains of industries and the world shakers, and he turned down Edison's invitation to work for him because he didn't want to be in the shadow of some other genius, you know. And then, you know, you figure, well, this guy is a jerk, right? Grandiose jerk. And yet he was the one that was appropriate for starting AA. And Roseanne was the perfect person to be God's instrument to found our fellowship. She had a secretarial background, copywriting background. Our first OA office was in her home, you know. And she was a housewife with two kids. The perfect person to be God's instrument for the OA fellowship, which, by the way, was all women when it started. And there was some dissension about letting the men in. Just like in early AA, it was all men, and Dr. Bob was a little skittish about letting the women in. You know, actually, when I came in 78, it was still pretty much all women, now that I think about it. But that's just my story. Perhaps you don't know, but actually, Roseanne was my first food sponsor when I got to LA. I'm here about 17 years. I'm in the program a long time. She's my first food sponsor. And in her book, she talks about her dad was a dietitian, and she used to always ask me, don't you need more greens? She was very food group oriented. But I really believe she was the perfect instrument to start a fellowship. And Rosby sends her regards and her respect. She's in a hospital. She's had really severe medical stuff. And she said, tell them, let them know that when I used to come up from OC and be whining about the meetings and everything, Roseanne just told her, we'll start one in Orange County, which she did. That was Roseanne's advice. She was a tremendous force in the fellowship. As David said, a couple years ago I was in Medellin, Colombia with a friend of mine in the beverage program. I went to, my Spanish kicked in pretty good, having not used it all that much, but I was sharing at a bunch of meetings, and every meeting I went to, how's Roseanne? She was like really a venerated figure in Medellin, Colombia, believe it or not, when I had almost a meeting a day in Spanish. So I totally second what he said. The only thing I want to say is that I remember when she came into Serenity Sunday when the book had first been published, Beyond Our Wildest Dreams, and she was like petting it and fondling it and talking about it, and she says, it was my favorite piece of writing. I'm so proud of it, you know. And I made sure I reread it before I did my big book study for the OA birthday party a few years back, and I just reread it again out of honor of her memory. And I want to tell you, I call my higher power God, as I don't understand him. I've been absent, you know, over 35 years. But I just want to say that if there is the big meeting in the sky and you want to make Roseanne smile, make sure you get and reread this book. That would really please her. Whether, you know. And the only other thing I want to say is when we started Light a Candle, I decided in my arrogance, Roy, you know, knowing how to run the show, that Doris should be our first speaker. She had longer abstinence, you know, at that time than Roseanne. And God intervened. And as usual, Roy was wrong. God was right. Doris couldn't make it up the stairs. She had some medical stuff. And Roseanne was our first speaker at Light a Candle. And looking back on it, I say Roy was wrong. God was right. She deserved the honor. She was the founder. Actually, if you read this book, you find out she was really a co-founder, because we had A.G. and Emma W. from Arizona, who actually had started food, you know, addiction groups at the same time. It's all in here. So if you really want to make her happy in the big meeting in the sky, make sure you reread this book. And if you're newer and don't have it yet, please buy this book, which is on sale. So she got the honor. She's our first speaker at Light a Candle. You can see it here on the podcast. It was an OA history talk, and she was really involved in it. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, John.
Okay, our next speaker is Nancy B. Nancy B. is there.
Girls, members, and friends. This is my Academy Award, appropriate for today. It is the last candle that Roseanne gave me, and I got to thank her for all she did for me. Roseanne always told me I was emotional, and quite verbose. She taught me that before I spoke to any large group, I need always put pen to paper. So, after asking God to guide my pen, and knowing that Jean and Doris would be looking over my shoulder, this is what happened. In Roseanne's own words, often hectic, sometimes upsetting, always soul-satisfying, the birth and development of OA has been a miracle in the making. There were triumphs and troubles, struggles and sharing, but always courage and commitment. In the early days of Overeaters Anonymous, heaven opened its gates and dropped down a woman into the meetings. Her name was Thelma. She joined OA because her husband was an active member of AA. She had been to tons and tons of meetings. Both Roseanne and her very spiritual friend Jean Smith asked Thelma to sponsor them. Thelma introduced them to many grand AAs who were our speakers and led all of our retreats for many, many decades, such as Dottie Shore, Alabama Carruthers, Don R., Al S., Nancy C., Eddie C., Chuck C., Bobby E. I called Jean to ask her one day to be my sponsor because, truthfully, I was too afraid of Roseanne, even though I raised my two daughters and lived within walking distance to her home. Well, Jean would not come to the phone, and I was so angry at that fact that I called Roseanne to tell her what a mean person this spiritual guru that she insisted I call was. And then she told me that Thelma, their sponsor, had died that day, and perhaps that's why Jean didn't pick up the phone. She went on to say, "Well, you know what, dear, just come to my home Tuesday night. There's a book study Jean, Janet Greer, and I have with all of our babies. We'll see you then," and she hung up. Later I learned that Natalie and Doris were going to do this on their side of town. So, Roseanne and Jean began to talk all the time, write constantly with each other, and I followed them like a puppy dog. Eventually, they decided to co-sponsor each other. I reported to Jean until her death. Jean got me out of my turbulent childhood and calmed me down, kind of, from my hectic daily life. But Roseanne inherited quietly and powerfully. She began to guide me from a selfish, wild teen to an adult with some dignity. Along the way, we read the Daily Word a lot. We picked out her sweaters and matching jewelry for conference year after year. She loved going to 100-pounders meetings with me, and many of you saw us there. Eventually, at her request, we spent a full year doing the Joe and Charlie Big Book workshops with a dear man named Samuel of N.A. We grew roses in her yard and read conference motions. She loved her grandsons and their moms and dads and talked about them voraciously. If I had to listen to one more soccer story, I thought I was going to go nuts. She loved a good deli, especially our juniors and Frohmans, but often settled for a weekly trip to the Oakland Cafe or Nichols. We often read letters that she would receive constantly by the droves from overeaters all over the world. She was always talking to a trustee and loved sitting in that spacious, beautiful, sunny kitchen of hers. Until her death, half of her home housed the OA archives. She was supposedly letting go of them and sending them to Albuquerque, but I knew she secretly had a copy of each and everything. She always told me that I was God's kid, no matter what trouble I constantly got in. She always told me I would do great things someday and live a calm, rich life in love and service. Well, she said I would make her and Jean proud someday. And as I work now with our councilman, Mike Bonin, and as I read to kindergartners about feelings or talk to doctors about OA or work on the City Council Homeless Project with mothers on the street who are overeaters and addicts, I know Roseanne is there with me. In conclusion, in trying to help a friend, Roseanne went, as we all know, to GA. When she so strongly identified, she approached their founder. He became her mentor and a true friend to our fellowship and her. Many years later, there was a 25th anniversary celebration of Gamblers Anonymous. Roseanne was invited and Marv insisted that they go. Jim was still mentally sharp, but his body was much, much needed help. It was really failing him. Roseanne seized the moment as only she could do. And in her tribute, she told him that night how his kindness and support had given her an ability to begin to start OA, and already people all over the world were truly starting to go to meetings, as she predicted in what we heard a few minutes ago. He received many tributes that night, but the final one given to Jim Willis was a simple statement written by Bill Wilson. He was AA's founder. It simply said, when God can't come, he sends someone else. And so, my friend, to you I say, I was a 300-pound troubled mom out of jail alone and crazy. God did not come, but he did send you. Thank you, Roseanne, for putting your hand in mine and welcoming me home.
Thanks, Nancy. Next, one of my best friends in program, Lynn M.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
This was all put together by John Tierney. My name is Len Magnus. I'm a compulsive overeater. I met Roseanne in July of 1976 in the parking lot behind the Culver City Methodist Church. She had gotten the car stuck on a tire or something and couldn't get it off. And being Superman, I tried to do it. I couldn't. She called the AA. I asked my girlfriend, who is that woman? And she said, that's the founder of OA. Founder of OA, she could be in my mother's Mahjong group. Anyway, I came to know and to love and to see the strength and to see the power, etc. I'm looking at Nancy and David. We were all on the intergroup board back in 1977. David had the money. Nancy was doing, I think, was doing publicity, and I was doing special events. This got me to put on the first birthday party. Roseanne was scheduled to speak at the first birthday party. And Roseanne would help quite a bit. She'd say, you know that award you give every year for the person who's done the most for OA who is not a member? I said, yeah. She says, how about Jim Willis? So we called Jim Willis. He was in the home at that time, but he showed up. He got an award for the most non-OA person who done the most. The next year, Abigail Van Buren, dear Abby, who probably did more to spread OA than any human being not in OA in the world. And Roseanne called and got dear Abby to come. She showed up at the Hilton down on Figueroa, and I was the chairman of the event, so I told somebody to call me when Miss Van Buren gets here so we can escort her. I was called, I escorted her, and as she got out of this limousine, she took off a mink coat that probably cost more than I'd made that year, although 1980 was not a good year for me. Anyway, and she said, would you please hold my coat? So I held her mink coat. She and Roseanne got up on the panel and they cut up and told stories, and it was a wonderful event. There were 300 people there. Was anybody at that luncheon, remember? Yeah, Nancy was. Okay. Jack was there. You're still eating the leftovers. Anyway, the following year, we were recommended to a radio psychologist named Tony Grant. And Roseanne was in on the selection again. Tony Grant came to the event. She was wearing a fun fur, a chinchilla coat. She took off the coat and she said, would you mind holding it while I speak? I figured I had a future. Well, We started to run out of people. We were looking for people who gave people a ride to meetings when it rained. I mean, we were running out of celebrity, so to speak, etc. And I said to Roseanne, how about if we acknowledge the spouse of the compulsive overeater? And she says, what do you mean? I said, would Marv come and get a plaque for supporting you all of these years? And she said, well, he's always left me to, you know, that was my thing. And but I'll get him to the dinner. So came the dinner, and the chairman of the intergroup started to make the speech about the loved ones, who, what they do, etc. And now, in the name of all of the spouses in OA, we give this award to Marv. And Marv turns to me, shoots me a dirty look, and says, here, hold my coat. That story didn't even make my inventory. In 1978, I was the secretary of Palms Park meeting, and Roseanne was asked to speak. And she came in and she bought a gray sheet for a dime. It was a dime in those days. Gray sheet was the food plan, for those who don't recall those days. And in the course of her remarks, she tore up the gray sheet. And I realized she was saying, this isn't a food plan, this is a lifestyle, this is a life situation, etc. And then she told me how she was almost thrown out of a meeting in Brooklyn for tearing up a gray sheet at the meeting. It was a desecration. What can I say? In 1980, we were delegates to World Service, and that year we introduced the book Overeaters Anonymous. I was given that book. Those who were there may have signed this book. I've got lots of signatures in the book. There is one from Roseanne, and it says, Dear Lynn, above all, keep coming back. Love, your friend Roseanne. I make no pretension about this. She wrote that 350 times, because there were 350 books, and she did that. But if you go in the same book to Roseanne's story, you'll find a story that she always told in her remarks. And it involved Rollo M. Boaz, who was the minister at the church at Crescent Heights in Olympic, where we used to have meetings up until the early 80s, whatever it was. And he's the one who said, if you remove your body from the truth, when you're ready for the truth, when you're ready, the truth is nowhere to be found. But if you continue to bring your body to the truth, then when you're ready, the truth is waiting there for you. And as she said, that's why she kept coming back. And it's one of the reasons that I kept coming back. So she was a friend. She was in my acting class about 10 years ago. She was good. She was very afraid of other people, very guarded, afraid to let down. She's very good in class. And I will always be grateful to her and thank her for leading me down the path. Thank you.
Just speaking about Dear Abby, only a week ago, I believe it was, a woman wrote in to Dear Abby. And her daughter, who now runs it, had a glowing thing about Overeaters Anonymous and had all kinds of stuff in it. So I just found that interesting. Our next speaker. What?
Give her an award.
Give her an award. Yes, we should give her an award. I'm getting heckled by speakers. Welcome to L.A. Next speaker is Jack Z. Jack.
I'm Jack, compulsive overeater. Thank you for asking me to share. And it's good to see some of the family here. Is this any better? Okay, good. Anyhow, thank you, John, and it's good to see the family, and it's good to see a lot of people here, including a contingency from San Diego, which is really great. I knew Roseanne. I came in February of 1971, and I'm not sure exactly when it was, but it was within the first month or two. And I was at work, and I had followed the gray sheet, which was mentioned, and I had discovered that the sugar-free chewing gum that I was chewing was not sugar-free. And this set me into a panic. So I, of all people, I called Roseanne. And I told her what I had done, and she talked me down, which was really good. And she let me know that because I had not done it intentionally, my abstinence was intact, which was good news, you know, for me. And then I think that I had a number of experiences with her over the years, including our birthdays were within one day of one another. And a very dear friend named Alta, her birthday was very close too. But every year I would call Roseanne and wish her a happy birthday, and she in turn would wish me a happy birthday. So it was a really neat thing. And I think one of the reasons I mentioned San Diego contingency being here is that, you know, Roseanne loved Overeaters Anonymous, and from the moment that I came in, everyone referred to her as the founder of OA. Everyone, you know. But eventually, for whatever reason, that title was taken from her and replaced with the title of co-founder, which never sat well within me. So I was a delegate to World Service. I brought forth a proposal to my intergroup to give her the title of founder, which she so deserved. And for whatever the reason, the intergroup declined. So I then called a friend in San Diego, Dave, yeah. And he basically said, no problem, you know. So the San Diego intergroup took the motion that I had made. He made one word change in it, and they wanted me to be the co-sponsor with the intergroup. And so when it came time at conference to share, I was introduced as representing the San Diego intergroup. It was also the then chairman of the board had been to the 50th anniversary, and there were people who had said that Roseanne really didn't want that title. Well, I felt I knew otherwise, having known her and the importance of it. And someone asked the chair when he introduced her, he introduced her as the founder, and why did he do that? And he related that he did that because that was what she wanted. And so that sealed it. And, you know, she is now what she always deserved, the founder of Overeaters Anonymous. Because, you know, in order to be a co-founder, you have to have been there. And so if anybody else was co-founder, they would have to change the date that OA began. Yeah. And, you know, boy, this is an emotional experience. But I was very happy with the shares that have taken place already. David's share, which was just wonderful. And Len, you know, he always lends a sense of humor. And one of the things that that I know was that, you know, that she considered Overeaters Anonymous to be her third child. Yeah. And I don't know how much, if any, sibling rivalry that non-existent. You know, it's kind of hard to argue with somebody who is not human. But in another sense, OA is incredibly human, with all of the thousands of people around the world who have had an impact from it. And I am so grateful to have had an opportunity to know a wonderful lady whom I would call every few months. I was always afraid of bothering her. and we would chat for a little while. And I found her to be just, you know, when she was at meetings, at least in my experience with her, she generally sat in the back of the room, and she seldom shared. Yeah. And, you know, she didn't go around flaunting, "I'm the one," you know, or anything like that. She was just a very humble presence. And I saw times, too, Al, who will be up a couple of speakers from now, may have seen the thing. You know, people think that it's people in AA that get to the point of fisticuffs. I've got news. In the early days of OA, there were members of OA that came very close. I remember a man and a woman, and they were not engaging in love, you know. They were out to take one another out, and it was Roseanne's calming presence, and she was able to talk them down like she had talked me down. And so I am so grateful. Thank you.
You know, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about two people who aren't here tonight, and one of which is Maxine, who many of us know. And Maxine had a bad fall a while back, and I was really hoping I'd be able to get her here, and she was not up for it. And she was going to give a message to Rochelle to deliver, and unfortunately now Rochelle won't be here. She was on the program, she won't be here. And the other person is Ira H, who's just had some surgery, and our thoughts are with him as well. And so anyway, to move on, next is Karen S.
Good afternoon, beautiful people. My name is Karen. I'm a compulsive overeater. You know, when I was sitting there, I was thinking, remembering a comedy routine I once saw where the speaker said, "Oh, I'm not going to say very much," and had this scroll of paper and unrolled it and rolled all the way down the room. I'm just wishing that I thought to do that before I got here, because that would have been funny. Okay, so it's a little funny in the telling. That's good. I honestly don't remember exactly when I first met Roseanne. It might have been at the Los Angeles Intergroup's long-standing bastion of strength and recovery known as Serenity Sunday. It might have been on a Wednesday night at Palms Park, which was my very first OA meeting. But I do remember a very special interaction we had early in our friendship. You know, I'd learned about the tool of the telephone. I'd learned about making telephone calls when I felt lonely or wanted to eat or otherwise needed to connect with another human being. And one such night, I called Roseanne. I don't remember the specifics of the conversation, but I remember it being fairly lengthy. I felt better after the phone call. But what I particularly remember is that she said at the end of the conversation, "There, we've just had our meeting." And I realized that I never again had to be alone with this miserable disease. Once upon a time, a bunch of us who went to Serenity Sunday would regularly go to the Century City Mall after the meeting for lunch and fellowship. I'm sure many people here remember that food court. And I see lots of heads nodding. Yes, indeed. Sometimes we'd go to the movies after lunch. I don't remember how many times Roseanne and I shared those fun afternoons, but I do remember how much fun we had going to the movies together, whether it be on those afternoons, on Christmas Day, or on a random Saturday. One time I suggested that we see two movies on the same day, which I had been known to do from time to time. She greeted my suggestion with such childlike enthusiasm, saying she'd never done that before. We had a blast. Very few things caused Roseanne's face to light up the way her grandsons did. Almost every time we saw each other, she told me of their latest exploits on the tennis courts or in school or any other story that happened since our last visit. She showed me pictures, and she beamed like the proud grandma that she was. In recent months, years, as her health was deteriorating, her grandsons would pay her unexpected visits. I'm told that when any of them walked into the room, her face would light up, and she became animated in a way that she hadn't been in some time. Although I wasn't there on those occasions, my heart warms when I think of those boys, well, young men now, taking the time to go and visit their grandma. What a wonderful gift they were to her. Roseanne and I particularly bonded over grief. Many of you know that my youngest brother was murdered some years ago. For years, I would be at meetings sharing my overwhelming sadness and my pain. In fact, many of you in this room comforted me as I cried through meetings and suffered through the ensuing long saga. I remember somebody telling me once that someday I would be able to share my experience, strength, and hope with someone who is facing their own overwhelming sadness and grief. Sometime later, I remembered those words and found myself surprised that I was doing that with the founder of Overeaters Anonymous. When Roseanne lost her husband, a delightful man, I was fortunate to know a little bit from seeing at LA intergroup birthday parties and World Service business conferences, it was a heavy, heavy blow. The program promises that we will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. Well, I didn't know what it was like to lose a husband of however many years, a lot of years, but I did know what debilitating grief felt like. I somehow knew, or hoped, that I might be able to help Roseanne as she had to face and walk through this devastating, devastating occurrence. Over many months, years even, we talked about her beloved Marv and my wonderful Joey. We cried together. We shared stories. We leaned on each other. Well, I tried not to lean on her too much, as her burden felt so much greater and, well, certainly so much more recent. Also, I felt a responsibility to step outside myself and be of service to her. That's just one of the many things I've learned in this program, how to be less self-centered. Not perfectly, of course, but I'm learning. Again, I remember thinking, wow, I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope with the founder of Overeaters Anonymous. Who would have thunk it? I'm giving myself goosebumps just remembering this. So as I think back on that now, and I think about Roseanne, I am struck by the fact that this was a woman who embodied the principles of this program. Although she was our founder, Roseanne recognized and accepted that she, like everybody else, could still learn from others. For me, in my experience, she never lost sight of the fact that while she did have tremendous experience, strength, and hope, and she knew about OA in ways that very few, if anybody else, did, she did not have a corner on that market. And she was never done with recovery. She was never too big or too important to listen to another compulsive overeater, whether it be to learn something from them or to share part of herself. Some of you have heard me reference the quarter story, but I never really told the quarter story. So I'm going to tell you the quarter story.
Yeah.
At least my experience of the quarter story. One day Roseanne and I were walking somewhere, I don't remember where. One of the things about being on the planet a long time is your memory starts to go, which is happening. But I remember we're walking down the street and she sees a quarter on the ground. Bends over and picks it up. She picks it up, she looks at it, she looks at the sky, and she said hello to Marv. She explained to me that whenever she saw a quarter on the street, she knew that was Marv letting her know that he was thinking about her. Now, the other night, I was speaking with one of Roseanne's daughters about this, and she told me a little bit more and told me that it was a family thing. It's part of the family history. And so I then understood even more the significance of those quarters. I understand it was more than just quarters, but I'm only familiar with the quarter part. And I've learned only to speak from my own experience, right? So when we buried Roseanne, I tossed in a few quarters. I recognize, of course, that she doesn't really need them because she is, I believe she's with Marv now. I tell you, I feel so fortunate to have been born when I was and to have found OA when I did. I'm part of an amazing fellowship with people who understand me, accept me, and love me no matter what. I am not sure where I would be right now if Overeaters Anonymous didn't exist. I am so lucky and so grateful that this West LA housewife, with her two babies, as she always said, found the courage and strength to lay the foundation of this vital, critically important organization, to love it, nurture it, fight for it, and build it so that so many of us could live. I consider it an honor and a privilege to have known and shared my life with Roseanne as she shared hers with me. I'm so grateful that her daughter shared her with us. And I hope that I can honor her legacy by doing what I can to ensure the health and well-being of Roseanne's third baby. Thank you, Roseanne. You live on in my heart and in the lives of hundreds of thousands of people around the world. Give Marv a hug for me.
We're going to swap around the last two speakers, and our next speaker is Judy H.
Hi, I'm Judy. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Judy.
And thank you very much, and thanks for doing this, and for asking me. I didn't know Roseanne as well as some of you, so I felt a little weird. Actually, I got asked to do this. I had just gotten back from South Africa, where I got my hair done like this. So you know how before recovery, we'd wake up with some strange person and say, well, it seemed like a really good idea at the time. Well, that's how I feel about this hairdo, but I decided I'll just leave it in. But I feel weird to be up in front of people like this. So anyway, I remember those days. I started OA down in San Pedro, and one of my first jobs was literature chairman, and I had to drive up to Roseanne's kitchen. Wasn't it the kitchen where crap everywhere? I mean, she just had stacks of literature everywhere, and she was a harried housewife and telling us all, take that and that, and here comes this new folder and pamphlet, and she was great. Very, very inspiring. But my most personal relating with her was that, and I used to love to come up to these meetings, you know, like you talked about the Crescent Heights meeting and Bill B's meeting, and that was where all the big people were, the big guys, and they knew how to talk, Al Sines and others, and they knew how to make, have laughs and be cool, and they were all perfect in my opinion, and I remember I came up for the 100 Pounders meeting Thursday night. I think that still goes on, doesn't it? Yeah. And I had I was a professional in the treatment field before I got into OA. I was very helpful to many other people. I myself weighed 222 pounds and did not have a clue how to help her. And this program, thank God, helped me get teachable and stay in this process. But I came up to 100 pounder, and so as a result of that, after I was in OA about a year, through a series of accidents, I started the nation's first eating disorder unit. I didn't want to, I didn't try to. It was actually because I had to leave a different job. And it just came about. And I came up to the 100 pounder meeting, and someone at that meeting had heard about this new pioneering work I was doing, and they said, hey, we heard about your new treatment program. Tell me about it. And I remember I just started shaking, and I said, please, this is OA. This is where I come to fall apart. Like, don't ask me a thing about that. I mean, that's my job and my work, and I don't have that hat on, you know. But it was really traumatic for me. I got very scared that there wouldn't be a place for me in OA. And someone suggested I call Roseanne, that probably she would have a lot of advice about that particular topic. And we talked quite a few times about that. And she had that same feeling that, you know, people were projecting onto her this bigness that didn't help her stay little. And I think I had it luckier because mine was, you know, treatment and work, and I could hide out more in OA. And she had a lot of difficulty with it because our program is about being vulnerable and teachable and staying in the question. And, you know, whenever that energy comes in the rooms about, I got the answer, I immediately get really scared because none of us have the answer here. And what's an answer one day, the next day isn't. But, you know, I was thinking about it this morning at my AA meeting, and there's a little quality of difference in the way I personally share when I'm sharing for you. You know, they're talking about you sharing. And then there's the I sharing when I'm at risk. I don't know what's going to come out. I don't have an answer to tell you, and I'm very vulnerable. And Roseanne didn't get to have that a lot, and I think it hurt her because, you know, that we have lines about catapulted into the fourth dimension and not just surviving but thriving. And Roseanne gave her recovery to us and didn't get the fullness, I believe, of what she wanted. Because we took it, right? We got it. And so I think in her honor, we have a bit of a responsibility to carry that on for her in that way of staying vulnerable. Our program isn't about answers. This is not Weight Watchers. Our program's about, I don't know, you know, seemed like a good idea at the time, you know. And you know, like Rule 62, we don't take ourselves so seriously. You know, we come in with very serious problems and we all get to laugh about them, you know. We laugh with each other about them and we hello, I'm cut off. Well, I am cut off. So, what do I do? Hello? Hello? Well, anyway. Wow. How am I doing now? Oh, anyway. It's off again. Okay. Well, then it is probably time for me to stop. But, you know, a few weeks ago, someone at a meeting was railing about, you better have a sponsor who also has a sponsor. You know, and Roseanne used to talk to me about having difficulty of finding somebody who could give to her, that she could respect, and also, you know, we choose a sponsor, find somebody who has what you want and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it. And it got harder and harder for her, and for us old timers, it does get harder and harder, you know, because we've heard it already, you know. So, I am so grateful to have an eating disorder so that I have to stay in this mode of asking for your help. And thank God you're still here. And also I appreciated Karen talking about her relationship with Marvin. That has been such a model for all of us, and I'm sure you kids feel that way, that they had a really good thing. And you know, our relationship problems are not just with our primary love object, food, but we have, you know, we have a lot of relationship problems, and she did model for us how to make that one work. So I'm off. Thank you.
Well, let me take a second to see if I can have any better luck getting this sucker working again. Do. Might be the battery. Oh, great. It seems to be going off, John. Al, you're going to have to play to the back row. If you can, and I think Al can. Our final program speaker is Al S., a man with 50 years of recovery. Thank you.
Is that Claudette?
Looks
like Claudette, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Can I do this?
Yeah.
Is it on?
No.
Can you hear me in the back?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't need that. My name's Al, I'm a compulsive reader. Carlos, did you know that?
Yes.
I came into OA in 1958. I was sober, 68 rather. I was sober at that particular time 5 years. And I came in weighing about, I stopped weighing at 235 pounds. And my experience with Roseanne, I never looked at Roseanne like as somebody special or anything. I knew she started OA, but I looked at her like a friend. And every time I saw her at meetings, we kind of chatted. And And I, how I met Roseanne is I sponsored Doris Siegel.
Yeah.
that was a job in its own. You know, I did retreats for Overeaters Anonymous. I did meditation retreats. They flew me all around different places, and I went to Long Beach, rather to San Diego. And I took Doris down there, and on the way back, she gave me her inventory. But I would run to Roseanne at just different meetings. She was just going to meetings. And
pay no attention to me.
I won't pay any attention to you. Okay. I ran into Roseanne at different meetings, and I'm just like a garden variety guy that goes to meetings. And I would bump into her, and she knew I'd been around a long time. So we just kind of buddied up. We chatted a little bit, and I'd go my way. But I'd always be I'm totally grateful for Overeaters Anonymous, because what it did, what it really did, what Roseanne did, she set up a program that transformed my life. When I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I totally hated myself. I hated myself. And through going to meetings, the sponsors are important. The first meeting I went to was in Belinda, in Hacienda Heights, and there was like five women there. Are we back again?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. There was five. Can you hear me now? There was five women there and one guy. When the meeting was over, I asked the guy. Talked to him, but he didn't have enough time to talk to me. He was busy talking on the women. So I had a food plan, and I had the meeting list on there, and I found a woman's name on there who was secretary of the group, supposedly. I called her up, and she became my food sponsor, and I never saw her until I had abstained for like a couple of months. And I still use a scale. I used to piss Doris off as I talked about weighing and measuring food. She didn't like that. I didn't like the food plan. I still follow it. I still have the food plan. In fact, I could have to get a new one. This is wore out. But I think the most important thing that Roseanne gave us, what this program gave us, is the way of living. It's the way of living. And that's what and I don't know if you're aware of it, but compulsive reading is a defect of character. It's a defect of character. It doesn't make me bad. It doesn't make me horrible. Just a defect of character. And on the program, in the OA program, the AA program, they talk about the seven steps. So if I'm hungry, or if I'm looking to eat, it's easier to turn your life over to the will of God on a full stomach. You ever notice that? And my trip was bean sandwiches. Have a couple of bean sandwiches, a large glass of milk, and turn my will over to God. But the only thing that happens is that the energy that caused me the suffering, see what happens is I suffer. And that suffering caused me to look to eat. Now, if it wasn't for Roseanne, I wouldn't know this. The suffering caused me to eat. Caused me to eat. Now, what causes that suffering? Fear causes that suffering. Now, what causes fear? Thinking causes fear. Same. And now what thinking, and I was doing a retreat for OA, and I really got it. It's strange. I was doing a retreat on some step. And what I did is I got one woman to stand on, a woman stand in the center, one woman stand on one side, a woman stand on the other, and I whispered in each ear, one girl's ear to say one thing, the other girl to say the other thing, and that girl in the middle was supposed to be the one receiving it. And what the message was, that one was saying that you're not going to get what you want, the other was saying that you're going to lose what you got, you're not going to get what you want, you're going to lose what you got, and you're not going to get what you want, you're not going to lose what you got. And what happens is it just flashed on me. I realized that group
Like, unless I handle that thinking, I'll be powerless. I mean, I'll be missing my life. And, you know, I've been able to do a lot of things since, I had horses, I did competitive trail riding, did endurance riding, I ski, and deep sea fishing, got married 4 times. More than a guy won, right, Carlos? More than a guy won, you know. But what happens is that I was set free. Roseanne said, and through this program, Birds Anonymous, is sitting free. I got deeper into the program. I got deeper into my steps into the program through Overeaters Anonymous because I had eliminated my last defense. My last defense. And what happens is where it gets to take us, where this program gets to, with Roseanne set it up, where it gets to take us, we get to meet the finest person in the world. We get to meet ourselves. And we get to be here, and we get to be who we are. And we get to love who we are. We get to love who we are. And if you know, how good that feels? You know how good it feels to have your own, to somehow or other have a connection with a higher power. I've never gotten that. If it wasn't Roseanne, I'd still be eating, because I would still be unable to deal with the issues that was causing me to be separate from myself and separate from my experience of my higher power. I started medicine, and I did OA meditation retreats for OA for like a few years. They put me off. And one of the things is, I'm going to sit down. One of the things is I experienced, we don't find God outside. I found this, through this program, I found this out. We don't find God outside. We don't find God in church. We find God is like, right here. Right here. If I want to be there, all I got to do is like, you know, tap my chest like, 3 times like that. And take three breaths like, and we're there. And thank you, Roseanne, for this path. I love you.
Well, thank you, Al.